space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise, its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Thank you. here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
You're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html. Also, while you're on that chat room, you can scroll down and click on the People for People radio link and go over and visit them in their chat room as well. A lot of wonderful folks over there. Also, don't forget to check out Wolf Spirit Radio while you're at it. So anyway, energy transfer system, big question mark there. The conversion of one form of energy into another, or the movement of energy from one place to another. Solar panels allow for energy transfer from light energy to heat and electric energy, among other things in the electromagnetic field as well. So a little example of the energy energy transfer system, excuse me. Yeah, if he falls off the branch and falls to the ground, his potential energy is now being converted into kinetic energy. When kicking a football that is sitting on the ground, the energy is transferred from the kicker's body to the ball, setting it in motion. So essentially, you know, for every action is an equal and opposite reaction, transferring energy from one place to the next. So according to the laws of conservation of energy, energy can neither be created nor destroyed. However, it can be changed, and that's what we're here to talk about. Why is it, you know, you keep hearing me talk about high voltage all the time? Well, high voltage is pretty amazing. I can best explain it as a wild horse. You know, you get this wild horse out there, and you want to ride that wild horse, but you know that wild horse is just... you know, kind of rowdy. It's not going to come where you want it. It's not going to go where you want it. When you get on there, it's probably going to try to buck you off and maybe get you hurt and all that kind of stuff. But if you can figure out how to tame that wild horse, a.k.a. high voltage, then you know you could do some pretty cool stuff with it. Because, see, when you're talking about regular current that we're using in our appliances, electrical appliances, and even in our electronics, they have to, that current has to follow certain rules. Otherwise, if it doesn't, you know, it causes things to happen. You know, you short other things out across there. However, you know, with the high voltage, it doesn't want to follow the rules like the regular current does. You know, it don't want to just go along with the flow, you know, and fight with all that resistance. High voltage wants to just jump up there and climb everywhere it wants to go. But with that high voltage is a lot of potential pressure. You know, voltage is pressure. And so if you know how to use that pressure, you can do a lot of work with that. You can store that pressure. So anyway, you know, whenever I'm trying to talk to people about high voltage and I'm trying to explain to them that I don't care about current watts and amps, maybe my terminology just kind of, you know, makes them angry because it doesn't match what the book said. But that's all right. You know, I got to figure out a way, different ways of saying what I'm saying, I guess. And so, you know, there's a purpose for this high voltage that I've been trying to explain to people about using energy in a completely different fashion than you're accustomed to. Once you understand the effects, the lens effect, or, you know, all the different losses in the system, which, while I'm thinking about it, I'm going to go ahead and play this little pod. It's probably, I'd say about 6 minutes, but basically, out of motor here. Motor generators and efficiency.
If you have viewed our videos on simple electric motors, you will know that these motors exploit the interaction of magnetic fields to create motion. Battery-operated or direct current motors use the fields created by permanent magnets and electromagnets. I'm pulling the end off of this DC motor. These are the permanent magnets. This is what they look like. As you can see, they are powerful magnets. This structure is the motor's rotor. You can see the coils here. They are wrapped around iron cores. Attached to the rotor is this device. It is a rotating switch called the commutator. It feeds electricity to the coils. These carbon contacts, the brushes, are connected to the battery and bring electricity to the commutator. As the commutator rotates, the contact points change. This changes the polarity of the coil magnetic fields, creating a powerful push-pull interaction with the permanent magnets, a push-pull that creates rotary motion. Interestingly, most DC motors will also function as electrical generators. I have connected an LED to the power connectors on this small DC motor. Spin the motor shaft and the LED lights. Electricity has been created. Small DC motors make excellent generators for projects demonstrating the creation of electrical energy from wind or water. This is a model water wheel. When falling water rotates the wheel, electricity is produced.
I'm going to pause that just for a second because I want to make sure that everybody noticed that what this man is talking about is a DC motor that has brushes in there. And so it's going to get to the point where he starts talking about efficiency. And, of course, if you can visualize mechanically what's going on inside that brushed DC motor, then you understand where the actual losses from that DC motor is actually coming from, because you have friction and heat being generated by that carbon brush, the two carbon brushes in there that are spinning across the top of the commutator. And so while you can spin a brushed DC motor in reverse to get electricity, you're all obviously going to have losses in that particular system. So a brushed DC motor would be the worst one to build a motor generator from. So let me go ahead here.
Produced by the small generator. I've mounted some DC motors on a base, allowing for some experimentation. Connect a battery to the terminals, and the motor spins. This configuration also allows the connection of one motor to a second motor, creating a motor-generator pair. I used a short length of vinyl tube as a coupler. Connecting an LED to the generator and connecting the battery pack to the motor, we can see the LED glows. Electricity is being generated. In an industrial electrical plant, the energy spinning the coils typically comes from water moving through a hydro dam or steam produced by nuclear fission or the burning of coal. Efficiency is a major concern when designing these industrial plants. It is important to know what percentage of the energy consumed is actually converted to electrical energy. Let's calculate the efficiency of this basic motor-generator pair. We can do this by calculating the power used by the motor and compare it to the power produced by the generator. Electrical power can be calculated by the formula I squared times R. That's current squared times load resistance. This produces an answer in watts. These two meters are set to measure the current. This one measures current flowing on the motor side, and this one, current flowing on the generator side. I'm assuming the resistance is almost the same on each side, consisting primarily of the meter shunt resistor and the coil windings. Don't attempt this if you are not familiar with safety procedures when working with electricity. And note that it is possible to damage an incorrectly connected meter. With our meters connected, we are ready to run. Connecting the battery pack, the system runs. The motor is driving the generator. Here are our numbers. On the motor side, we have an average of 1.67 amperes of current. On the generator side, we have 1.31 amperes of current. Here is the I squared times R calculation. I don't have a value for R, so I left it as a variable. On the motor side, the system consumed 2.79 times R watts, while on the generator side, the system produced 1.72 times R watts. We can calculate the percent efficiency of this system by dividing power produced by power consumed times 100. I'm assuming resistance R is the same on both sides. R drops out of the equation, producing this result, 62% efficient. This means for every watt of power put into the system, we only get 0.62 of a watt out. This inefficiency largely comes from mechanical friction and electrical resistance. I have been asked if it is possible to electrically connect the generator back to the motor, creating perpetual motion. The generator drives the motor, which in turn drives the generator. Looking at the efficiency of this system, 62%, you can probably see why that won't work. The laws of thermodynamics also have something to say about the viability of perpetual motion machines. Check out our video, Build a Water-Powered Mill, for instructions on creating a model hydroelectric plant, and visit our website, hyloroad.com, for more science and technology-related videos.
Okay, so 62% efficiency is what he pretty much calculated from that deal. Now, keep in mind, it was a brushed DC motor, not brushless, brushed DC motor that he was using. So, here's the thing. So, 62% efficiency allows for about 30-some-odd percent efficiency increase. So, but just by removing the brush portion of the deal and going to a brushless system, you can increase that efficiency. So, at the very least, being able to give you a longer battery run on your battery because you don't have as much of a loss in the system. But either way, when you're talking about making a motor generator, where you take one electric motor and you run the other electric motor, and it one is generating the mechanical force necessary to turn the next one that is going to turn that mechanical force, transfer it into electricity, then with the losses that you just saw right there, or I basically heard, you didn't see it. Anyway, nonetheless, when you're running that first motor, the brushes are actually causing some losses because of the friction and the heat. So, you know, that's where you get into the whole not being able to do the perpetual motion thing, is because those losses bring in your power input down to your power output being only 62% of what it actually took you to run that doggone thing. Just by changing that system up and taking those brushes out of there, you can make it so that that 62% might be 70% now, if you understand what I'm trying to say here. So by taking whatever losses would have been available, you know, even to the extent of losses due to electrical from, you know, the electrical resistance of the heat that would have been generated in the, you know, the motor by the electric current flowing through there, and taking that heat and transferring it somewhere else. So basically what we're talking about is, instead of having any losses in the system, you take away any factor in the system that's going to be a loss to begin with that you can already take away mechanically, and then you take the other, what would other been losses out of the system, and you move that energy forward again. So keep in mind, according to the conservation of energy, energy can neither be created nor destroyed. So when you put that energy from electrical input to, you know, your electric motor, and you're going to run it to your generator on the other side, then all that energy is moving forward in one direction, with exception of your losses, which are being dispersed via heat out into the atmosphere or whatever, you know, the surroundings. And so let's say we get our electric motor down to its maximum efficiency. You know, we quite reached 100% on this thing, but we took away the brushes and we took away the heat losses by, you know, using even necessarily an outside force to actually keep that engine, that electric motor cool, so that those aren't losses anymore, or taking the heat, which would have been a loss, and transferring it, you know, electrically through, say, thermal couples or thermal piles or Peltier elements or whatever, and moving that energy into the form of electricity in the opposite direction, and from every stage, ensuring that whatever would have been bled off as a loss is actually going, you know, in the right direction. So even the motor itself, you know, if the motor itself was used for a task, that if it does generate any heat, that heat's transferred into, you know, whatever medium you want it to transfer to. But anyway, when you get to the generator side, now we got to talk about losses on that side. So once you put that thing under a load, while it's just sitting there freewheeling, while it's not, you know, trying to run any power thing, power up anything, any kind of load whatsoever, It's just freewheeling, and all that energy that's being generated by the, you know, the brushless side. See, if you had the brushed on side over there, then you'd have to be pushing that electromagnetic energy in the opposite direction, and then transferring that from that through the brushes to electricity on the outside. Well, those brushes in itself are going to be friction on that side as well. So take that out of the equation. Now you no longer are using any brushes, and so you just basically have a magnet, permanent magnet, brushless motor on the opposite side. That as the first motor, you've reached its maximum efficiency, and now you're onto the generator side, where now you're using this generator basically as an alternator, an AC current output on the opposite side. So you just transferred your DC input through, you know, whether it's your motor controller or whatever, down in through the system. And of course, we also got to back up to the motor controller, because if it's generating any heat in the transfer of this energy from your battery to your motor controller to the electric motor and so on, you also got to move that energy forward with it as well. And so you're basically running all this energy down a pipeline, moving it forward, and keeping all, even the loss energy going in the same direction, and moving it on down the line. But with the just by merely taking the brushes out of the equation on both the motor side and the generator side, and redoing that math on there, you would raise your efficiency up higher than what it would have been otherwise, by, you know, taking those what would have normally created a loss due to friction and heat out the other side, and making it to work in free will. But so anyway, we're on the generator side now. That generator spinning whatever RPMs that the motor is actually capable of. And if you watch this particular little video, he just used a piece of rubber hose to connect the to couple the both shafts of both motors together. So even in that right there was a loss mechanically, because it wasn't precision, and you could actually see how it would wobble, causing a vibration, which in turn would take that energy and transfer some of that energy into another loss, which would be the vibration of the engine itself and the actual coupling of the two motors together. So now visualize taking that electric motor and the generator side and putting them on the same exact shaft, so there is no wobble from mechanical coupling of these two motors. So you have two motors on the exact same shaft. And then visualize taking not just two motors, but lengthening the actual shaft and putting, say, six motors on that same electric motor. And keep in mind, these are all brushless DC motors or brushless AC motors, regardless, no matter how you want to look at it. Either way, when the main driving force, which is the single motor that's actually running it, depending on the number of RPMs that this thing is actually spinning at, will determine the output side on the other side as far as the voltage-wise. And here, on Mad Science, it's all about high voltage to me. High voltage, high frequency, because of what I explained earlier in the show. So anyway, you have this motor generator now that is capable of producing high voltage at high frequencies, at high RPMs. The higher the RPMs, the better. And now you have an extreme amount of efficiency going on here from calculating from what you would have had using the brushed motors to going to a brushless motor, from going to any kind of coupling between these motors to a direct connection via a solid shaft going all the way through how many ever number of these motors that you want to put in. So now whenever you go to put your output side onto, let's say, because now you got an AC wave that's actually being generated, you got AC currents being generated, the moment you put a bridge rectifier on there to change that AC back into DC current again, Now we're talking about losses again. So we got to be able to get around this and not do that, because the moment you turn, let's say, a light bulb on that system, well, now you get to experience the biggest problem with that particular loss is the lens effect, where now those electron flows are actually going right back into the same generator head that you're trying to pull a motor on, which produces a second magnetic field that's now acting as a brake on the armature, which is slowing it down. And that is why the efficiency from making a motor generator, if you're trying to run it in the standard form that you're doing, you're going to notice that you, from what this man just explained, you're only getting 62% of the power back that you actually put in. So it's a loss. And we need to not have that loss when we get to the other side. Keep in mind, folks, I'm not trying to get to perpetual motion. This is what I'm trying to do here. It's not that we don't have free energy. We do have free energy. The world has free energy already. They just don't understand how to use energy properly in order to get these systems to be so incredibly efficient that, you know, your average Joe can actually afford to run a generating system or whatever. You know, when you got a wind turbine out there, and if you understand how to use that energy, you can actually make your wind turbine more efficient. If you've got solar panels out there and you understand how to use that energy properly, you can get more efficiency out of the average solar panel than you think you can. But you can't think about the standard way that we've actually been doing things, the normal way that we've actually drawn power from things, because now you're fighting against an energy that you're wanting to move forward and use that forward motion of that energy in order to be able to get work done. The moment you put any type of work to that energy, now you start talking about efficiencies again. Whether or not you're using that energy properly, or whether or not you're doing something on the other side that's actually causing that generator to have to work harder than it would otherwise in order to move that energy. We want to get to a point where we can use this energy without slowing down the prime mover of the generator. And so, how would you do that? Well, one way is what I've been trying to explain for quite some time, is turning that energy into something completely different. But before we get to that, let me click down here. I want to play this other podcast here. It's about, let me see. Shouldn't be too long. That's 7 minutes.
Hello and welcome again to RC Model Reviews, and I'm going to be doing a series on electric motors, in fact electric power systems altogether. And so I thought I'd start with basically just what an electric motor is and some of the differences between the different types of electric motors you're likely to use in your RC model aircraft. Now, the most common motor is what we call a brushless outrunner, and I've got one here. Here we go, I'll show you this one. Now this is a brushless outrunner. This is RC timer one, I think. And you can tell it's a brushless outrunner because when you turn the shaft, the outside of the motor turns. Not the inside, but the outside. So the bit that runs around is on the outside, so it's an outrunner. Simple as that. And here we go. I'll pull this one apart so you can have a look at what's in it. They get a bit hard to pull apart. Now, normally they wouldn't come apart, but I've got a circle. I've taken off the circle on the back there. You can see there's this bell portion here, which contains a whole lot of magnets.
I also want you to pay attention when he's talking about this particular motor right here. He's talking about an outrunner, and then on the other side he's going to talk about an inrunner, and the two differences there, because they have some physics capabilities for each style of that motor. And so with that said, you can use some things that are actually going on with this particular motor, such as the centrifugal force and the flywheel effect of this outrunner motor being able to give this motor more torque and so on. So I'll go ahead and finish playing this.
Yes, this is the outer part of the motor, and this bell portion spins around and round, And those magnets there provide the magnetic force to interact with the electromagnets on what we call the stator, which is the inside part of the motor. So the outside part spins round, the inside part is just a bunch of electromagnets, which are some of them, well, they're all basically wired in parallel in a slightly different way, which means we only have to use three wires to activate all those electromagnets, because there's really only three or two sets of magnets that are energized at any given time. Now, this is what we call a multi-phase AC motor. So although we used to, most of the old toy motors you had in your old toys, they were just DC motors. Just put straight DC power on them and they would spin around. These are a little more complicated and they require AC, which is why we have an ESC, which I'll be covering in a later video. But basically, that's all there is to a brushless outrun. There's not a lot, is there? It's just that bell that goes around the outside and the coils or the electromagnets inside. And of course, they have bearings in there to support the shaft and everything, but no, that's pretty much it. And despite the fact that they look so different, there's such a wide range of them, because here's another one. Here's a bigger motor. This is a Turnergy motor. But again, if I turn the shaft, the outside of the motor turns. It's a brushless outrunner. So it's the same basic design as this other one, except the Turnergy one's a little bit longer. It's actually the same diameter, but it's longer, which brings me to actually the naming conventions, because you'll see all sorts of numbers associated with these motors. This one here is a 3530, which means it's 35 millimeters in diameter, and the magnet section is 30 millimeters. Sometimes the bell is 30 millimeters in length. So this one, it's the same diameter, so it'll be a 35 something, and if we look at it, it's actually a 3536. So instead of being 30 millimeters long, it's 36 millimeters long, which explains why this one is shorter than that one. So that's the basic. Of course, these naming conventions, like everything, they don't always apply. Some motors have different types of conventions for naming them. But if you buy them all from the same family, like Turnergy motors or RC timer motors, whatever, then you can be pretty sure that the naming conventions will be fairly consistent. So you've got to work out roughly how big a motor is by the numbers on it before you even buy it. So that's outrunners, brushless outrunners. And even the AXN has a brushless outrunner. That's a little motor there. It has a little mount on the back, but it's basically the same design. It has a bell with magnets and some coils inside that energize to spin the bell around. Now, there is, of course, the in-runner motor. And here's an example of that. This is a Turnergy brushless in-runner. And you'll notice here that if I turn the shaft, the motor outside doesn't turn. So the bit that turns, the bit that runs around is on the inside, hence in runner. Simple as that. These are more like the old DC motors that you're used to. There's an armature inside, and the magnets around the outside of this motor remain still. The armature spins around inside. So it's simple as that. In fact, I tell a lie. If we look through the back of it, we can see that the magnets are attached to the inside piece and the coils around the outside. So it's still the magnets that spin and the coils that remain fixed. But this time, the coils are on the case of the motor, the magnets are on the armature or the shaft. So that's it. So those are the two basic different types of motors, in-runners and out-runners. You might say, why would we have two different types of motors? Why can't just all be in-runners or all be out-runners? Well, there are a number of reasons for that. Mainly, when we're using these out-runner motors, because the magnets are so far, or the moving part is on the outside, there's a greater, what we call, moment of force. So we've got, like having a bigger lever on the shaft, so we can get a lot more torque out of our little outrunner motors than we could from an in-runner motor. And for that reason, when we want to turn a large propeller, because, I mean, for example, this is a this motor could turn this propeller here, this big propeller. When we want to turn a large propeller, we use an outrunner because we're going to have more torque, we're going to have more leverage to turn that propeller. In-runner motors are generally used where you don't need so much torque, but you need a lot of RPM. So this is one for an EDF. And that means that this motor doesn't produce as much torque, but it does produce a lot of RPM. And that's a rule of thumb, because there are exceptions. Here's a brushless outrunner that we use for an EDF. So it's not always true that, you know, in-runners are for high RPMs and outrunners are for high torque. But that's basically it. What I'll do in another video is I'll explain how these motors work, because obviously, unlike the old DC motors of yesterday, which only had two wires, these have got three. And as I mentioned, they are an AC motor, a multi-phase AC motor. So how on earth do we take our simple old battery, our lithium polymer battery, which is a DC battery, and create the AC needed to drive this motor? Stay tuned and you'll find out when I do a video on how ESCs work, and also exactly how these magnets and electromagnets interact to produce rotation. So thank you for watching. If you've got any questions, put them on the bottom of the video or in the RC Model Reviews forums. And if you like the video and you want to see more, put thumbs up and then I'll make some more. Thanks for watching. See you again soon on RC Model Reviews.
Alright, so I hope you got some of what he said right there. You know, an energy transformation. An energy transformation is the change of electricity from one form to another. Energy transformations occur everywhere, every second of the day. There are many different forms of energy, such as electrical, thermal, nuclear, mechanical, electromagnetic, sound, and chemical, because the law of conservation energy states that energy is always conserved in the universe and simply changes from one form to another. Many energy transformations are taking place constantly. So an example of an energy, examples of energy transformation, a toaster transforms electrical energy into thermal energy. A blender transforms electrical energy into mechanical energy. The sun transforms nuclear energy into ultraviolet, infrared, and gamma energy, all forms of electromagnetic energy. Now, our bodies convert chemical energy from food in mechanical and electrical energy to allow us to move. A natural gas stove converts chemical from the burning into thermal energy used to cook your food. So, now that we've got that all sorted out, brushless DC motors, brushless AC motors, any of the ones you've heard so far here, now we can actually, because we understand how all these things function, now we can actually visualize the effects. Like when he's talking about the electrical outrunner motor, which they use to drive larger propellers because you get more torque out of that. Alright, well, what could you do with that more torque, you know, for, you know, transferring that energy into pulling power or whatever? But also you could use that more torque in order to assist that motor, because it is an outrunner, and you could actually put a balanced weighted system on there, or even a flywheel to that, to assist that motor to, once it builds up those RPMs, it uses that flywheel effect, that centrifugal force, to keep that motor going long after you shut the power off. And so that's one of the things in alternative energy that people have been doing for years to make, you know, the flywheel effect actually assist that electric motor. When you want to talk about actually getting more higher RPMs than maybe he was actually talking about the end runner, because of the way it's designed, and you're not trying to use it for a torque application, then you can actually get higher RPMs out of this particular electric motor. So now you know, with those two things, you've got several different aspects that you can actually use that same electric motor for. So imagine if we got on our solid shaft, we got the first motor being a brushless DC motor or brushless AC motor, either one. And then the next one, we have one that is specifically designed for, you know, RPM wise. You could have two motors actually doing, you know, helping assist each other when you're running these two motors together, that one is for torque and one is for RPM. So when, like in the transmission of a car, when you start off in the low gear and that gives you the torque necessary to get your vehicle moving, once you get your vehicle moving, then the transmission shifts into the next gear, which then in turn makes that thing be able to go faster down the road. So depending on how fast that you can get this thing to transfer this energy, you know, to torque, to move in your car, and then once it's up moving, it takes less energy to keep it moving. So now you kick over to the more efficient, higher RPM motor, because it's already got the flywheel effect occurring in the next one down the line that has the weighted system on there. So it's already built up the RPMs and it's got that flywheel for torque, and so it makes it even more efficient from what we've explained so far. And then from that point on, you could alternate an higher RPM one, or you could actually just stay with the Outrunner style and more flywheels down the line in order to, because once it hits that RPM, it's not going to matter anymore whether or not you have to have the torque in order to turn that. So you can still achieve the high RPMs that you want using whether it be the in-runner or the out-runner motor on the other end of your shaft down there. So let's say you got a shaft that is, let's say just hypothetically, 6 feet long. You got an in-runner, an out-runner motor for your torque to get this thing started. You got an in-runner motor for your RPMs to, once it gets started, it transfers that the power input away from the first motor and puts it into the second motor for the RPM. So that's like your transmission change in speeds there. But once you got it up to speed, it doesn't take much to maintain that speed. So now your second motor in line is actually your prime mover and driving this electric motor. From that point on, all the other motors that you have, whether they be in-runner or out-runner on the other side, or if you want to stick with the out-runner so that you can actually have the flywheel effect, or even the in-runner with separate flywheels for every single, in between every single motor from there and on, in order to take advantage of that centrifugal force that's going to help to assist that motor to stay running long after you shut it off, making it yet even more efficient. So anyway, now that we got this thing up and running, and we run our calculations, what the man was talking about in the first little podcast that I played, and where he only was able to achieve 62%, now I would estimate that you're going to, at the very least, bring it up to over 80% efficiency, if not higher, from the way that you're actually using the energy from your initial power source through the motor that is transferring that energy down the line. And keep in mind that now we're talking about other physics being added to the deal. Now you're actually adding to the system as far as the energy, because once you get that flywheel up to spinning, you got to calculate in that energy as well. Because once that thing is up and spinning, it's actually making it to where that engine, the motor that is actually turning, that doesn't have to work near as hard, so it's draining less power from the input side in order to keep it maintained. And so you could actually, from that point, once you got this thing up and running, take that motor, and instead of having a constant power source to it, have that motor switch from a constant power source to a pulse power source. And so it's only every once in a while giving it a kick, just keeping it going, giving it a kick, keeping it going, shutting off, starting, shutting off, so on down the line, and keeping that thing maintained, which then therefore would make your system yet even more efficient by using less energy from your output side. So the faster this thing gets up to running, the less input you're going to have to keep. It's like whenever you get your car going down the road, once you get up to highway speed, you don't have to keep mashing down on the gas. You can let off the gas and you can maintain highway speed just by a little bit of input on the other side. So you're actually using less fuel on the highway than you would be otherwise whenever you're trying to go stop and go and stop and go traffic, because you're already up to speed. The same thing would apply with your electric motor generator, that once you got it up to speed, you wouldn't have to keep the same amount of input that it took to get it started to maintain it once it was up to speed, because of all the physics that you just applied to it. Now you have extra power that is being produced by the way that you designed this thing. This is all I've been trying to say all along about how you use this energy from start to finish. Now, the question that he actually asked at the back where he said people had asked him, can you take this motor and loop it back around to itself? Well, I'm not looking for perpetual motion. Never have been looking for perpetual motion. And at this stage in the game, I'm not even looking for alternative, zero point, or, what's the other one? Over unity or zero point. I'm not looking for either one of those. I'm not looking for perpetual motion. I'm not looking for over unity. What I'm talking about is utilizing free energy and physics to move energy from one place to another and get work done at an incredible efficiency. Once you do that, then that means that you don't have to spend as much money on your doggone electric bill once you understand what the heck I just told you. Because years ago, and you have to Google this up or try to do some research in it, there was an actual gentleman that got himself in hot water with the power company and end up basically taking the equivalence of one output on his house and ran a customized generating system that would pull power from his outlet that he was paying for via the electric company, and then taking that energy and transferring it down the line, using it to generate more power that in turn was powering the rest of his house. And so they tried to accuse him of stealing electricity, but in reality he was not stealing electricity. He was paying for everything that he was using via the power line. The rest of it, what he did down the line, because of he understood how this energy transfer worked, was that he was only paying for what he used for the power company, which was minuscule compared to what that house should have used via the power company if it was run out by the standard deal. Well, the power company figured that he was trying to steal electricity and tried to figure out why he or how he was stealing electricity, but there was no tampering at the meter. There was no tampering anywhere. You know, anything on his side of the power box was his. You know, anything on this side of the meter was his. They'll even tell you that. The power company will tell you that if anything breaks down on the opposite side of that meter that goes to your house, everything from that point on is your responsibility to upkeep and maintain. And you can't even get in that power box by yourself without them coming out first to open that box up, because they put a little security tab on there. So everything from that part where the security tab all the way out belongs to them. Once you pay for that electricity, it's yours to do with what you want to do with it. And so if you understand energy efficiency from that point on, you can do what that man did, and you can power your house with a smaller amount of energy than you would have otherwise used to begin with. But you first have to understand that if you have a system, you have to know where the losses are going to be in that system. You got to know where to apply the proper physics in order to be able to make sure that when you transfer this energy out, that you're going to get a better output on the other side. So, in a sense, what the guy did... he got more energy output from his system than he was actually paying for. And if you understand how all these physics of what we're talking about, you know, gear weight ratios, centrifugal force, leverage, and everything like that, he took the best of all the physics. And he used these physics to be able to get more work done than what the average person would normally get done by the way that they're actually using that in the standard fashion. And so by the time it was all said and done, he was able to transfer that energy, which is more than enough. The power coming out of one single outlet is more than enough power to do a lot more work than what you think it's actually capable of. When you understand how that energy works, then you'll understand how it is that they're able to take a direct drive Fisher & Paykel or Samsung washing machine and put all that water and all that clothes inside this washing machine, or even the dryer for that matter, and be able to spin this around using that motor, the torque of that motor. Those direct drive pulse DC motors like that, they have a lot of torque because they understand the physics of how that motor is actually designed and using that energy that is making that that washing machine motor or the doggone dryer motor, or even in your air conditioner, the X13 motors that we were talking about, the job that they do, if you go look into how, what those motors are actually doing, then you understand why they're more energy efficient. Now, see, these folks know what it is that I'm telling you. That's why they're able to sell you these machines that are, you know, energy efficient and actually not be making a false claim at you. So, Stephen Gibbons said, I'm still a spring chicken, and very happy birthday to you, my friend. I hope you have a great day. Everybody listening in, old Shaziz is hit the 53 now. He says, I'm still spring chicken, so he must be old. it's all right, man. We're still going to make it. We'll be all right. Thanks for the happy birthday, though. Anyway, so folks, if you listen to what I'm trying to tell you, we haven't even got to the point of what this energy transfer system that I'm talking about would actually be doing. Let me get a drink of my coffee here. So anyway, those motors in the washing machines, they are energy efficient because they use physics. They use physics for torque, leverage. They're able to, you put all your wet clothes and all that water in there, if you calculate up the weight of what's spinning around inside there, and the way that they make these things, the way that they position the drum on the washing machine to the way that the motor is and whatever, you'll start understanding that that's because they made these things to use the laws of physics to their advantage.
Smoke on me.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Yeah, can you describe the ruckus? All right, sorry about that. Nature calls when you're 53 years old. Anyway, so basically what I'm explaining to you right now is that everyone out there has already had free energy. The world already has free energy, and I'm trying to tell you how to use it. If you take in, you look at things mechanically, the way that they function, and you can find out where the flaws is, and that's how, you know, like with the internal combustion engine, why we have to have a radiator, because one of the flaws is that it generates a lot of heat trying to get the amount of power that we want. So we got to be able to get rid of that heat. That burned it. We got to be able to get rid of that heat. So we got to cool that engine down. And when you cool that engine down, it takes a little bit of extra work to do so. So you add to the system, you add a water pump, you add some coolant so that you can cool that, you can circulate that water through there to cool that, to transfer that energy where you want it to go, which eventually is out to the atmosphere away from that engine. So back to the energy transfer system that I'm talking about. If you're going to be using a power source, and you need this power source to be to last as long as physically possible, like your average battery, whether it be lithium ion, nickel cadmium, nickel metal hydride, or just a regular lead acid battery, or you know, what's the alkaline battery, whatever, doesn't matter. You need to be able to get as much use out of that one battery as possible. And so with that said, you need to be able to transfer that energy from that battery in the most efficient manner to get the very most amount of work done out of that deal. Which means that when it comes down to trying to charge that battery back up, you're not going to have to put near as much, near as fast into that battery that you're using to drive your prime mover. It's one of the things that Bedini showed everybody, but they didn't seem to, it didn't seem to get, it didn't sink in because they didn't understand what he was trying to say. But anyway, so let's just stick to the simple. We've now built us a brushless DC motor generator that has one outrunner starting the motor cycle, and then it has one inrunner. The outrunner for the torque, the inrunner for the RPM, and from that point on, everything after that is a generator head, which is a brushless motor, permanent magnet motor running in reverse, pushing power out the other side. And so we, in part of our physics on this particular motor generator, we added a large heavy weighted flywheel to actually assist, once this thing gets up to going, to assist it to keep on going to where it doesn't have to work nearly as hard as it did prior in order to function. So now we have, on the opposite side of that, we get two electric motors at the front, one an outrunner for torque, one an inrunner for RPMs, and we have a flywheel, then we have our first generator head, and now we got to figure out a way to bring power off of that generator head, because as it stands right now, the generator head is not doing any work other than spinning around, producing a change in magnetic field that is producing an AC current. How's it going, Scottish Sovereign? Okay, so it's now we're actually producing a AC current coming out the other side. Now, what are we going to do with that power? We could rectify that power with a DC rectifier immediately right out of the gate. But once again, the moment we do that, we invoke the lens effect that will now begin to transfer energy in the opposite direction back down that shaft to the prime mover, making it have to work harder the more of a load that we pull off of that. And so I don't want to do that. I don't want to send that energy back in the other direction. I want to send that energy in the same direction that I wanted it to go in all along. So now we've got to decide. We know we can take this energy and we can change it to a completely different form of energy, and one in which the electric motor will not recognize. So if you're not sending electron flow back down the same generator head you're trying to pull power off of, now there is no way for that lens effect to ever be invoked. There's no way for the second magnetic field to start acting as a brake on the armature. So I want that AC power that's coming out of that generator head and all the generator heads on the same shaft, on the same system, I want that AC power coming out. Depending on what RPMs I'm actually spinning this out will determine the voltage output. But nonetheless, even at a standard run, you know, maybe 1500 RPMs is more than enough with a permanent magnet motor generator to produce 60 volts AC, which is enough to actually energize neon gas into the fourth state of matter, being plasma. So now I'm going to take that energy and I'm going to convert it completely away from the standard electricity that you could actually run your appliances on. So now I got energy that I can't even use my electric motors to run on the opposite side. I can't even light a light bulb, except for the fact that the neon itself is the equivalence of a light bulb, because now it is generating heat and it's generating light as well. So all I did was take that energy and transfer it into something completely different than what I actually need to run on the opposite side, on my output side. So now, if you redid the math and the calculations from what I just explained, from your output, whatever power output you got, when you get on the opposite side of the spectrum, when you get on the output side, all the losses in the systems have been moved forward. None of the losses of the system are remaining behind or calculated into what the man in the very first podcast was trying to explain, why it is you can't have a doggone, you're only getting 62% for every watt you're putting out, you're only getting 62% of a watt out the other end. And so that was due to all the losses in the system that he just explained. And if you understood what I just explained to you, we moved all that energy forward without all the losses in the same system. So that's why I can confidently say that we moved all this energy at a much greater efficiency than the system that he explained. Now, to calculate this out, you'd have to calculate with different types of measurements. On the input side, you could calculate the standard model of what it's actually draining. But on the output side, now you got to calculate it in a different fashion, because now you're not talking about current and watts and amperage any longer. You turn this into more like lumens and BTUs. So now you've got light and heat on the opposite side. We just turned all of this stuff into, all this energy into a completely different form of energy, light and heat. Now what can we do with that? That's where, now whenever you build a system from that point on, you build the system to transfer the energy back to wherever you want it, using thermoelectrics in the most efficient manner as possible. And of course, you got to listen to the mechanics and the physics of everything that I've explained in order to be able to draw that power back to where you want it. But it, the simple of it is, if you understood what I explained from front to back, you just understand how I was able to take that energy and transfer it down the line at maximum efficiency and change it into a completely different form of energy that cannot feed back on itself and slow that system down. So with that said, that is what the man who was pulling power off of his one outlet that was running the rest of his entire house understood, of how to move that energy. Because as this generator is running around, there's a lot of forces that could be actually tapped into while this system is actually running. And keep in mind that everything you add to it as far as an output, like even if you put fan blades on there, to, you know, while this thing is spinning up and everything, those fan blades have a dual purpose. One, to suck air across the entire system to keep it cool, making it more efficient, plus transferring that rotation into basically wind power is pushing, you know, air across your room, circulating air around your room. Or even taking, for that matter, the heat off of any of the electric motors that might be warming up and transferring that heat energy around the room for heating purposes or whatever. You know, for every, you know, degree that you can raise that room temperature up inside there using that specific piece of machinery, now that energy isn't lost anymore. It's actually being used. It actually has a purpose. Every single system out there that we've got running can be made to be more efficient. When you're running the compressor in your doggone refrigerator or your freezer or your air conditioner, you can transfer, because you understand the physics of how this thing is actually working. When you're compressing the gas and it's generating heat, and you got to be able to get rid of that heat because it's counterproductive to trying to, like, if you're trying to cool something down, you obviously don't want to be heating it at the same time you're cooling it. So they got vents to guide that heat energy out the back as opposed to in the same room that you're trying to cool down. But even to that extent, now you can take what the knowledge that you just if you understand what it is that I explained to you, and be able to move that energy where you want it to go. If you got one room that you need heated, but you're going to keep the other room cooler for whatever purpose, like you got your doggone freezer in a back room and you don't care if it's cold in there because that helps it out anyway, but you want that you want that waste heat to come into your room next to you, so you could vent that heat off of the back of that refrigerator or freezer into a room where you did need heat. See, back in the day, they were always talking, there were people out there talking about how if you take an air conditioner and you spin it around backwards during the wintertime, you can use that same air conditioner to heat your house. Never tried it, but, you know, it makes sense that if you got heat going out the back of that air conditioner, until those two temperatures inside the house and outside reach the same, you'd still have a difference in temperature that you could use that energy from. But there's more efficient ways to do that. So, let me see here. Where are we at? So, basically, What I did was just explain how, and I called a company to try to get somebody to build me a customized motor. Who's this? I called a company trying to get them to build me a customized motor, where essentially is brushless motors, because I want to make a miniature version of what I just explained to you, so that I can make a video and show everybody exactly what I'm saying, and show it, prove it in that. See, that's the problem in the alternative energy community. It's not what you believe, it's what you can prove that makes the difference. So, the problem you have, until you put it into an actual physical model to satisfy those that can't visualize mechanically what it is that you're explaining, then basically it's all pretty much theoretical, according to them. In my mind, it'll function exactly how I'm saying it and explaining it. And if they actually took the time to, you know, take this idea, build it, test it, they would find out exactly what I just explained, that the efficiency of what this motor generator would be capable of, from what the other man in the podcast explained, only 62% efficient, which I'm going to go ahead and play that particular podcast one more time for people that just showed up. So it's just a little short podcast anyway. I'm just going to go ahead and replay it, if I got the right one. Here we go.
If you have viewed our videos on simple electric motors, you will know that these motors exploit the interaction of magnetic fields to create motion. Battery-operated or direct current motors use the fields created by permanent magnets and electromagnets. I'm pulling the end off of this DC motor. These are the permanent magnets. This is what they look like. As you can see, they are powerful magnets. This structure is the motor's rotor. You can see the coils here. They are wrapped around iron cores. Attached to the rotor is this device. It is a rotating switch called the commutator. It feeds electricity to the coils. These carbon contacts, the brushes, are connected to the battery and bring electricity to the commutator. As the commutator rotates, the contact points change. This changes the polarity of the coil magnetic fields, creating a powerful push-pull interaction with the permanent magnets, a push-pull that creates rotary motion. Interestingly, most DC motors will also function as electrical generators. I have connected an LED to the power connectors on this small DC motor. Spin the motor shaft and the LED lights. Electricity has been created. Small DC motors make excellent generators for projects demonstrating the creation of electrical energy from wind or water. This is a model water wheel. When falling water rotates the wheel, electricity is produced by the small generator. I've mounted some DC motors on a base, allowing for some experimentation. Connect a battery to the terminals, and the motor spins. This configuration also allows the connection of one motor to a second motor, creating a motor-generator pair. I used a short length of vinyl tube as a coupler. Connecting an LED to the generator and connecting the battery pack to the motor, we can see the LED glows. Electricity is being generated. In an industrial electrical plant, the energy spinning the coils typically comes from water moving through a hydro dam or steam produced by nuclear fission or the burning of coal. Efficiency is a major concern when designing these industrial plants. It is important to know what percentage of the energy consumed is actually converted to electrical energy. Let's calculate the efficiency of this basic motor generator pair. We can do this by calculating the power used by the motor and compare it to the power produced by the generator. Electrical power can be calculated by the formula I squared times R. That's current squared times load resistance. This produces an answer in watts. These two meters are set to measure the current. This one measures current flowing on the motor side, and this one, current flowing on the generator side. I'm assuming the resistance is almost the same on each side, consisting primarily of the meter shunt resistor and the coil windings. Don't attempt this if you are not familiar with safety procedures when working with electricity. And note that it is possible to damage an incorrectly connected meter. With our meters connected, we are ready to run. Connecting the battery pack, the system runs. The motor is driving the generator. Here are our numbers. On the motor side, we have an average of 1.67 amperes of current. On the generator side, we have 1.31 amperes of current. Here is the I squared times R calculation. I don't have a value for R, so I left it as a variable. On the motor side, the system consumed 2.79 times R watts, while on the generator side, the system produced 1.72 times R watts. We can calculate the percent efficiency of this system by dividing power produced by power consumed times 100. I'm assuming resistance R is the same on both sides. R drops out of the equation, producing this result, 62% efficient. This means for every watt of power put into the system, we only get 0.62 of a watt out. This inefficiency largely comes from mechanical friction and electrical resistance. I have been asked if it is possible to electrically connect the generator back to the motor, creating perpetual motion.
We got to pause there for a second and replay that one little spot right there.
Watt of power put into the system, we only get 0.62 of a watt out. This inefficiency largely comes from mechanical friction and electrical resistance. I have been asked if it is possible to electrically connect the generator.
So he just told you in this video where the losses were actually coming from. And so this is as far as anybody ever takes these deals, because once you see, look, there's losses in the system, you can never get past that. That's the problem in the alternative energy community, is that whenever they do the math and they see that this is only 62% efficient, let me go ahead and finish what he's saying.
Generator back to the motor, creating perpetual motion. The generator drives the motor, which in turn drives the generator. Looking at the efficiency of this system, 62%, you can probably see why that won't work. The laws of thermodynamics also have something to say about the viability of perpetual motion machines. Check out.
Alright, so enough of that. The laws of thermodynamics are basically saying that perpetual motion is not possible. Who cares? Seriously. Stop with all the perpetual motion. Stop with all the overunity and all the zero point and just utilize free energy, period. Now, I already explained in the system where the losses are coming from. So, we know we can repair those losses. We can take and send that energy where we want it to go. There ain't no losses in the system. So, whatever you put on the input side of it, you should be getting out that same amount of energy on the output side if you're guiding that engine, all that energy into the same direction and you're storing your heat energy over on this side, and you're storing your electrical energy on this side, or whatever. When it's all said and done, you should have as much energy as you started with at the other side of that. You just move that energy from one side to the next, and they're still, you know, it's all losses. Well, at the very least, even if you really want to claim that you're losing energy, which you're not, according to their own laws of physics, that it's not possible, the conservation of energy, that it goes into the universe somewhere. It's out there. You didn't get rid of it. You didn't destroy it. So where's it at? It's in heat. It's in the form of electrical or even radiant energy or even sound energy. You just took this energy and you moved it from point A to point B, and in the process of doing that, you basically tripped the dominoes in different directions. Now, if you know which directions these dominoes are going, you can gather up those dominoes and put them focus them right back into the same exact output side that you want to go out there, so nothing in the system gets lost. None of the energy that you used gets lost. There is no losses in the system if you engineer it properly. This is what I've been trying to say. So once we get our energy to the other side, right now, leaving all the potential thermal loss, and this is why I don't like the laws of thermodynamics, because it's there to basically say perpetual motion over unity and 0 points not possible. So, regardless, set that off to the side. We'll get back to it later, but nonetheless. So now we've increased our efficiency, amazing amount of efficiency now, by using those laws of physics to our advantage to take this energy from using the energy to produce torque with an outrunner motor, using that torque to get the system up and running, and then from that point switch over from the portion that is actually using the torque to the system, the next motor in line that is actually designed for RPM purposes, because once we got this thing in motion, it doesn't take near the amount of power to keep it in motion until we start drawing the load off of it. But if we never start drawing a load off of it in the standard fashion, none of that energy is capable of transferring itself back through the motor generator to start slowing this thing down, producing yet even more losses. So when you take this energy off of this generator, depending on how fast that you speed this thing up or slow it down, you can actually control the frequency of the output. When you energize this gas into the fourth state of matter, being plasma, you got light, you got heat, and you have frequency. You have radiant energy from the reactions that are occurring in this plasma reactor. So now you can take this energy and you can transfer this energy via heat to heat water, or, you know, heat any type of liquid, or even heat any type of material for cooking purposes or whatever. You can use the physics of any specific metal. Like, for example, copper is not only good for conducting electricity, but it's also good for conducting heat as well. And so if you got this plasma transferring the energy to copper, you can use this copper to actually do your cooking with. You can make a cooktop stove that, when that plasma energy is transferred to the copper, it heats that copper up to whatever temperature you require, and then you use it to cook your food. And then when you're done with that energy, you can transfer that energy down into a system that is going to, you know, cool or transfer the heat energy from the copper into a liquid such as water. Now you're not only using that energy to heat your food, but you're also using that energy to heat your water at the same exact time. And in the process of doing both of them, whether you're heating your food or or heating your water, you can use other physics like the Seebeck effect to actually produce electricity using thermoelectrics in that same exact system. So you're heating your food, you're producing electricity, you're heating your water up, and you're transferring all this energy from the plasma state right back into other multiple usable energy sources. So what I've been trying to say all along, it's not that we don't have free energy, it's that we're not using the energy efficient enough to make a difference. Because we're used to being energy hubs. We're used to things being poorly designed. The transformers that we got these days, with exception to one that's on the power pole outside that belongs to the power company, those are incredibly efficient. But the ones that are in your appliances and your radios and your TVs and your electric motors, those are incredibly inefficient. Because every time you use any type of energy, you produce a waste product such as heat. It's a loss. So if you find out where all these losses are actually occurring, where the heat is actually happening in your systems, you can still utilize these same systems, but you can transfer that what would have been wasted energy to where you want it to go. I mean, your appliances, if they're generating heat, even your television while you're watching TV, if it's generating heat, you might as well be using that heat. Which, a prime example is this. Where I'm at right now, it's a little bit cold outside according to my, you know, comfort level. But before I got on the radio show, because I have all these computers and everything, before I got on the radio show, I used a space heater to warm my room up. They got my room up to operating temperature, so to speak. Then when I started at the computer, because of the heat losses that are actually in the computer, now I got the main resistive load heat system off the deal and actually using the waste heat from the computers and the monitors in order to maintain a comfort level in this room, so where I don't need that heater running anymore. So, once you understand what I just explained to you, you could do the same exact thing. If you're running, the old incandescent light bulbs, that's actually generating heat into your room. It's adding to the system. Once you get your room, if your room is well insulated up to operating temperature, that light bulb would be more than enough to maintain the temperature of that room for a long period of time after you shut your heater off. Just like these computers are wasting energy via heat. So, between that light bulb and between your computer, once you get your room up to operating temperature, then you shut your doggone heater off. See, if your heater's already self-regulated, it's going to kick off anyway. Once it gets to your comfort level temperature, it's going to shut itself off. And so it won't come back on until the temperature drops down. So that just made your system more efficient. Once you get that figured out, now you know how to make your doggone house super efficient. By taking every bit of what would have been wasted energy and moving it where you want it to go, guiding that energy to where you want it to go. So with this motor generator that I'm talking about, if I could get somebody to build a long shaft and take an outrunner RC motor and then an inrunner RC motor and then maybe a weighted flywheel and then next one in line would be, you could use from that point on, you could use all inrunners or all outrunners depending on what you want to do with these motors, that you could actually use these motors to do other tasks in the process, which you have to calculate into your efficiency of when this thing's running. But there are things that you could do with these, spinning other flywheels, producing electricity as well. So, it's when you're designing your system, you need to design it to your specifications of what you need personally. But anyway, if I can get somebody to take six motors, and put them on the exact same shaft, press them all on the same shaft. Now there's no need for any coupling in between any of these. So all these motors will be running true with each other. And that makes it more efficient. So I'm going to take whether it be an AC, two or three phase AC motor, or even a pulse DC, two or three phase motor, brushless motor, as my prime mover to turn all these other motors down the line, to turn a flywheel that's going to build up, stored energy in the flywheel itself that's going to help assist, and then have the first motor as the one that gets it up and running, and the second motor that actually takes the motor to the RPMs where I want it. Let's see. Scotty Sovereign said, ask Steven to take six motor Shaz. He's from Newcastle. He can take them without ye knowing about it. Uh-oh. I don't think I was supposed to read that on air. Anyway, if you know anybody, though, that could actually do this, that would speed up the process of me being able to actually produce a video to explain to everybody what it is I'm talking about. See, the first system that you heard the guy talking about, he was talking about a brushed DC motor once again. Now, brushed DC motor obviously going to have losses because of the friction of the brushes spinning around. So there's a loss right there. And the electrical loss from, having to fight against that is a loss as well. The friction, the heat, and the extra current that would have to be drawn in order to drag these brushes across the commutator, that's all a loss. What I want is whenever I put the energy to that, I get this motor to run to its capabilities, and then whenever I have the next motor in line, using that next motor in line to actually assist by, once it gets up to operating speed, then I don't need that torque anymore to keep it there. All I need is the RPMs. It's just like a transmission shifting gears. And so once I get this all up and running without any load on it whatsoever, then the mathematics can be done to measure the efficiency of how much I'm actually drawing current watts and amp wise from the system, from the battery, from the initial power source, how much power draw is actually that it's actually taking. And then we can even factor in any losses that might, if we could measure temperature of the motor itself to see whether there's any thermal energy being lost that can be gathered back up. So when it gets to the opposite side of the spectrum and then I start drawing this energy off of it the way that I'm suggesting that we draw it off, using frequency, high voltage, in order to energize gas into the plasma state, now your measurements on the opposite side aren't going to be your standard measurements as he was measuring it there. So the efficiency, on the opposite side, the way I'm going to be drawing this energy off isn't going to be in the fashion that we're accustomed to, that's going to invoke the lens effect that is then in turn going to go back, transfer that energy back through and cause it to be less efficient and drain more power. I'm going to transfer the high voltage, high frequency AC current that is being generated by the permanent magnet brushless motors on the opposite side into heat and light and radiant energy. From that point, doing the measurements of what's occurring on the other side, then you know where all your losses would have been. If part of that loss is due to radiant energy when these neon molecules are slamming into each other and it's producing an ionic field around it or whatever, you know, high voltage discharge, that's energy that can be moved somewhere else and can still be utilized and captured and stored. As far as the plasma inside, the heat and the light, both of those are still energy. So I haven't lost anything in this entire system. When it gets to the other side and we do the measurements of efficiency, I just transferred this energy from this point to that point, from this state to that state of matter. Now, if I can get somebody to help me put a micro-sized version of this, it doesn't even matter, even if it's a teeny tiny little setup, the math will still apply. If you can scale it up, you can scale it down. I just need 6 motors, brushless motors, on the same exact shaft, so that everything's precision from start to finish. So whatever input that I put on this thing right here, and the way that I pull that motor off, or that energy off on the other side, when I do a video and the math is done and everybody can see what I just explained to them, they'll understand why it is that I've been saying all these things that I've been saying for years. Let's see. So anyway, in every single system, to get work done, they claim a loss in every single system. It's only a loss if you don't utilize that energy. And I'm saying properly engineered, what this man said about building a motor generator and looping itself around each other, if I got 90% efficiency out of my system, then that means I only have to pull 10% from nature in order to maintain the work that I'm wanting to get done. 10%. One little tiny solar panel supplement that other percentage of energy that I've used. Think about that. So instead of using, only having 62%, you brought your efficiency up to at least 90% or even 95%, and anywhere from 5 to 10% is all you'd have to require from an outside source such as solar or wind or hydro or thermal in order to maintain that system, to get it to run itself, because there are no losses in the system that I'm describing. So if anybody wants to jump on the live here with me and talk there, feel free to do so, because I'm running out of breath. So I'm going to take another music break. And see where we go from there. So stay tuned, folks. You're listening to Mad Science. No. Yeah. Mommy's gonna worry.
are the voyagers of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Singing.
space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Yeah, I heard the ruckus too, man. It was that old crazy old Shazaz out here talking about free energy again. So anyway, you're listening to Mad Science. What I explained... energy transfer system, and I put a question mark on there because, you know, until everything is actually put into a physical model, then basically, according to the way everybody else looks at it, it's all theoretical because not everyone can see mechanically. You know, whenever I watch things work, I actually watch the gears turning in my head, and I can mechanically understand what is occurring with electricity or water or hydraulics or anything like that. You know, I can physically see it in my mind and I can understand how it's actually functioned, and that's where my, I guess what my gift or curse would be, is that, you know, that's where my strength is. I can understand how things work, and to try to find the proper terminology to put it into a way of understanding for everybody else to see what it is that I'm trying to say to them, that's a little bit more difficult because, you know, maybe vocally wise, or is that even a word? Maybe trying to get this information out to other people is harder for me because what I'm seeing in my mind mechanically, there's all kinds of terminology to explain it to different types of people. Like an electrical engineer, you'd use different terminology than you would be as if you was talking to a doctor or, you know, a plumber or whatever. But everybody in all these fields should be able to understand basic physics and basic chemistry. And so what I'm saying mechanically should make sense in their mind if they could actually get past the terminology portion of what it is that I'm trying to explain. What I've just explained to you is that your average Joe, if they understand just a little bit of basic science and just a little bit of basic physics to understand these little why things happen, why for every action something else happens, and what's the cause and effect of all this. That means that if worst case scenario come down and you had to build you some sort of system where you was actually able to generate electricity, you'd have an understanding of how electricity even is produced to begin with. But then you would also have the understanding of how you could actually go out and recycle old electric motors, treadmill motors, permanent magnet motors, and even be able to turn what would have normally been an AC motor into a generator. Just by understanding how the optimal automobile alternator functions, you know, when you energize the fields in an alternator, basically you're energizing coils, which is your magnetic field now, And that magnetic field, instead of using permanent magnets, is doing the, you know, the rotor's doing the turning, and it's doing the same exact job. Because that, those coils, they don't care where that magnetic field comes from. And so you can simulate the rotor using electronics like transistors and MOSFETs and switches and even mechanical oscillators and such. Once you understand all that, you could go out and you could salvage up parts to actually build you a generator. And if you could take six of these direct drive washing machine motors, put them all on the same exact shaft, you just built a motor generator. Now, is this motor generator powerful enough to run your house? I say it is if you use it properly. If you take this and you understand how it is that your house requires so much energy to begin with, because, for example, your heating system, if you're on an electrical heating system, you're using resistance to produce your heat. But there's a way to generate that same amount of heat without using any resistance. You know, at the proper frequency, nichrome wire, which is a wire that is basically resistance to current flow, that same wire, without any current flow whatsoever, just using the right frequency to energize the molecular makeup of the material itself, interacting with the electrons, protons, and neutrons via a magnetic wave signal going down this doggone thing, or even for that matter an acoustic wave signal that is resonating at the same frequency that wire is. You can get that wire to do the exact same thing. It's going to get hot. It's going to get hot from vibration and, you know, friction, or even to that extent, not the way that the current flow that is the resistance that causes it to get hot. So you just turned it from a resistive load to a non-resistive load because you're sending energy into it in a different fashion, which is causing it to get hot. You can transfer heat energy. Like, for example, if you got a Tesla coil running and you got a spark gap, one side going to the ground and one side going to your high voltage power source, when you're running that, because it's going at a high voltage, higher frequency, and it's leaping across there, it's actually causing that metal on the opposite side. Never, ever, after you shut the power off, go up there and touch those spark gaps, because they're going to be hot. Real hot. So you know you can generate heat with high voltage. So if instead of using a resistive load, you're using a high voltage on the other side and allowing that, instead of being like a direct connection, which would be causing it to draw current, you're no longer using it to draw current. You're actually using that result of that high voltage leaping across that gap, and that plasma is being generated at the end of each one of these tips of this spark gap to cause that heat to start backing up through that metal, and that metal will begin to get really hot. So what would have normally been a loss now becomes a plus, is basically what I'm saying. If you understand the physics of how this energy is actually traveling, then you can take that energy and you can guide those losses into where you want them to go, and so they're no longer losses anymore. This is what I've been trying to say. The guy explained that an outrunner motor, those RC motors, an outrunner gives you more torque. And that's because if you look at the way it's actually designed, the outer shell is actually like a flywheel. So that is actually giving you more torque because you got leverage that is actually, when that thing is spinning around in a circle, that centrifugal force built up, that flywheel effect, is actually giving you more torque, which makes sense. Now, on the end-runner side of it, where you actually have the magnetic rotor on the inside and the coils are actually on the shell of it, so the outer shell's not moving, it's the rotor that's moving, it's a smaller diameter, so this is giving you higher RPMs, but it's not giving you the torque that you would have had with the outrunner side. But like I said, if you understand that concept, what's going on there, You can take these two pieces of physics and you can put them together. You can use the torque one to get it started. You can use the RPM one to maintain the speed once you do get it started. So now you can shut the torque one off. You don't need it running anymore. All you're doing from now is a maintenance power input. And so that's why, if you go back and look at my video, Redneck Hot Tub, I don't know why it is that more people didn't understand the significance of that particular video. But the significance wasn't just, and I guess it was kind of brilliant because because it said redneck on it, and that got a lot more people to look at it. Maybe I ought to make redneck everything. Anyway, if they would have understood what I just showed them, they would have understood efficiency in a completely different manner, because the only purpose for that hot tub, well, there's a multiple purpose, because I actually got a hot tub out of the deal. It was cool. But it was what I'm trying to say is that when I got it up to operating temperature, it took me 4 hours to get it there. But once I got it to operating temperature, it only took a smaller input in order to maintain that temperature. So I'm running this coffee pot element for, 4 hours. Took me all that time to get this thing up to where it's hot enough where you can set in it in the snow. I mean, it was snowing outside. I was in there in my shorts and that thing. And it's not insulated underneath the tub, and it's open to the atmosphere. And so that those raw losses, all that energy being transferred out into the atmosphere and cold air blowing up underneath the thing. But what I proved was that once you got that thing up to operating temperature, it didn't take nothing to maintain that temperature. Even in the dead of winter, when there was ice outside, that water was warm. It was hot enough that if you left that coffee pot element on too long, it would get so hot in that water that you could not physically set in there. Your body temperature is at 98.6 degrees. That's your average body temperature. And anything above that is, if it's over 100 degrees, 103 or whatever, you start basically cooking yourself. And you don't want to do that. Make you sick. And it can kill you. But the point of what I'm trying to get to is, what you saw with that hot tub is an example, just one little tiny example of what I've been trying to explain to people for a long time. It's not that we don't have the energy, it's that we're not using it properly. If you don't have an understanding of how this energy is actually functioning, if you don't have some sort of mechanical view of what's actually occurring while you're using this electricity, then you're basically stuck to going over flipping the light switch and paying the man. But once you understand that, then you could take these same physics, the same concepts of what I'm talking about. Imagine the heating element in your hot water heater. The heating element in your hot water heater is a huge resistive load. Unless you've got a gas, powered hot water that's actually burning fuel to do the same thing. But nonetheless, if you got an electric hot water heater, the huge resistive load that's running off of either 110 or 220, depending on what size or that you've got or whatever, once you get that up to operating temperature, you can change that heavy-duty resistive load down to a smaller load that is going to draw less power from the system. So now you just got a maintainer load going. You don't have to have this thing kicking on all the time. And even it will even get to the point whenever you got the lesser load, which instead of the higher resistive load, you got the smaller maintainer load that is just circulating water back and forth. And you can actually use thermal convection in order to basically cause this water to circulate. It'll thermally siphon itself around. It'll keep the temperature of that water continuously, going up. And when it gets to a certain temperature that is your comfort level on your hot water heater, it too will shut itself off. And when it drops down, instead of kicking on the main resistive load, it will kick on the one that's going to just maintain it. The maintainer load is the only thing that will kick on, because all you need is to keep a little bit of energy going in order to keep this thing to maintain itself. So you'd have a hot water heater that initially would cost you more to start and run to get it up to operating temperature. But once you got it up to operating temperature, the maintainer load kicks on and the main load kicks off. So you're using less energy to maintain the temperature of this water. And until you drain all that water out, taking your shower or doing your laundry or whatever, until you pump it full of cold water, then you're still going to have that doggone maintainer load going. And until all the maintainer load can't keep up with the temperature, then that's when the final deal is main load will actually then kick on. So, one small minor modification in every single household could save you a massive amount of electricity. That's one small minor modification. Now, using all this, what I've been trying to explain to everybody, bringing things around to a simple understanding of simple science and simple physics, you could actually make your house so incredibly efficient that it's only pennies on the dollar that you're actually paying the electric company. If that, because if you bring it down to where the equivalence of all you're drawing from the power company is one simple light socket, which is, you know, maybe a few hundred watts or whatever, then you could take and you can pull that few hundred watts right out of the air. You know, using atmospheric electricity or thermoelectric from the sun or wind power, hydroelectric power, you know, whatever. You don't need that much coming from the power company in order to maintain what it is that you need to do. And once you've got your entire house situated to where everything is super efficient and you got smart circuits on your doggone stuff, if it's shut off for more than an hour and it's not a necessity that it be running, it actually cuts the power from the main power source to the transformer that's inside of your, like, your phone charger. If it doesn't detect any load being drawn, that it will shut itself off so that there's no power from the main grid going to that. So you could actually build a smart power strip that would shut itself off if it's not being used. If there's no power being drawn for a certain amount of time, then it will shut itself off and only turn itself back on when it required a load. And so you'd have a little storage bank inside there with a battery, and that battery would be tripped to a relay that whenever you're decided you want to turn something back on, when you turn it on, it'll drain that power down. When that power falls to a certain level, it will release the relay, which will turn the power switch right back on again. So you'd have a system that would shut things off, turn it off and shut it, turn them on and off whenever you decided you wanted them to be on, so that they weren't on when you wasn't using them, and your electric bill would be yet even lower. Folks, we have every single piece of the puzzle necessary to build the perfect efficient machines, the perfect efficient houses that would they'd be smart. Your house would save you so doggone much money that it would be ridiculous. And if you understood how people like the Igloo cooler people build thermoses and coolers that are able to keep your food either hot or cold depending on whatever. If you put it in there hot, it's going to stay hot. If you put it in there cold, it's going to stay cold. If you understood that, then the way that you insulated your house when you was building it to begin with, you could make the thing so thermally efficient that when you stand outside, you don't see any heat leaking outside your house with a thermal camera or anything like that. And then the simplicity of the heat rising and the cold air falling. You put your heater in the floor, you put your cold air in the rafters, and you transfer that energy using the laws of physics to your advantage so that it takes less to drop that cold air from the ceiling down and cool the area than it does, to try to, heat the top of the roof, and hopefully it comes down and finally heats the whole entire room, but the majority of that heat remain suspended up there on the ceiling. So if you're standing on the top shelf of a whatever, or on the top bunk, the guy on the top bunk's sweating to death while the guy on the bottom's freezing. So, you know, that's common sense. So I'm trying to get a mindset out there to people who are talking about clean, renewable, alternative energy, that if they want to do this super efficiently, and I'm not talking to the mainstream industry, because they don't care. They'll sell you things that say energy efficient so that you'll buy them. And they do, to some extent, make them energy efficient by doing what I just got through telling you. But as far as them going any further than that and making that thing incredibly efficient, a dual purpose, your TV's actually helping to heat your water in your hot tub or whatever, you know, there's videos out there on YouTube that show how you can actually tap into your outside AC unit and heat your water, so you got a heated pool. You know, even during the summertime, your pool still loses the heat energy, so it'll get pretty cold. And even in the hottest day of summer, you jump in the pool and it's cold as heck, and you got to get used to the water. But by tapping into that energy that's already available, because you're already using it anyway, you've already paid for it, why waste this energy? Transfer that energy over into your pool. Or transfer that energy into a storage bank like your hot water heater. When you transfer it into your storage bank like your hot water heater, you can use your hot water heater as a battery. You can take the thermal heat off the side of your hot water heater. If you took this same doggone hot water heater and you modified it and you put Peltier elements inside there with heat sinks that stuck outside the casing of your hot water heater, now you're going to be producing electricity at the same exact time while you're keeping your water hot inside your deal. Now keep in mind, that energy transfer will make it where your hot water heater will probably, you know, go down just a hair faster as far as temperature wise than it would have otherwise, because you're actually using a portion of that energy. You're allowing a portion of that energy to go through the Peltier element back out into the air again. And you need that temperature difference from the outside to the inside to get the Seebeck effect to actually function in the Peltier element or thermocouple or thermopile. When they talk about thermocouples and thermopiles and even Peltier elements, they say that they're not very efficient, and because once both sides become the same exact temperature, then that the Seebeck effect stops. It's the difference in temperature that keeps it going. And so if you can always maintain a temperature difference, you will always be producing electricity. And even if you're only using this to trickle charge battery storage or whatever, none of that energy is wasted, because you're using that thermal heat, which who knows how many doggone thermal couples or thermal piles or Peltier elements you can put on the same exact heat source. Has anybody ever done the math to see? Because even a pilot light, if you're close to a pilot light, you measure the temperature of that pilot light in your gas stove, you'd be amazed at how much energy is just in something as simple as a pilot light. And that pilot light becomes like that redneck hot tub. The element that I used off the coffee pot becomes a maintainer. It's a maintainer power source. So even after you shut your gas off and that pilot light's still rising that heat up, that little tiny pilot light is taking it, causing, putting enough, just enough energy into that hot water heater to where it doesn't cool down nearly as fast until you start drawing from it. Once you start drawing from it and cold water starts coming back into the tank, it's obvious that that pilot light can't maintain that temperature. But by itself, just a candle underneath the tank of water, once it took a long time, a lot of energy to get that water up to operating temperature, something as simple as a candle underneath there will help to keep that from getting cold a lot. It will extend the life of the thermal transfer of that energy, where that energy stays, that heat energy stays in that tank much longer. And the insulation that you use on the outside of it will add to that. Everything that you can do to make it more efficient is going to be a plus and make an electric bill even less. So what I'm saying is you can get down to, if you want to, right now, with the technologies available, you can get down to a zero electric bill. It's that simple. With a little bit of engineering, a little bit of investment, even if you only did this one room at a time, if you made every room of your house efficient, one room at a time, if you swapped over from, let's say, resistive load, tungsten element light bulbs, or, even the fluorescence, get rid of the fluorescence, get rid of the tungsten element, the resistive heating ones, anything with a transformer in it, and move to LED style lighting, or even pipe lighting from the outside. During the daylight, you get free lighting, and during because using things like fiber optics, you can actually build your own version of fiber optics with PVC plumbing and some lenses. Take the light from the outside, and that light will shine down through that water just like fiber optics. It'll go around the corner and down the bend and pipe it right down into your basement. You'll have a light source in your basement that you'll be able to, just like the fiber optics works. But either way, light your basement for free with the fiber optic style lighting from the outside. And, if you ain't got no windows in your basement, you can actually pipe sunlight in down into your basement using everything that you've learned from, refraction to lenses and such like that. So you could have free lighting in your basement and without no electricity. This is not rocket science. But either way, everything that you do will add to the efficiency of your energy usage. You could build a house that the house itself is the generator. Everything that you've learned from thermoelectrics to wind power, solar power. If you design this house specifically to in the summertime, it'll shut certain things off. This thing, like if you got a thermal water heater or something and you want it to run 24/7 all year long, then you can leave it wide open. But if you're using that same system, then you can actually regulate the temperature by blocking off a section of this system. So you got a sliding door across your thermal water heater. If you only want to bring the water temperature up to certain degrees, you can cut off some of that heat energy coming from the sun just by sliding a cover over the top of it. Getting it down to where it's going to maintain that specific amount of energy coming in. It's so ridiculously simple in my mind. I'm just trying to, share this with everybody out there so the folks that are talking about clean, renewable, alternative energy can actually start guiding the future into a completely different mindset of how we actually build things to begin with. Even with the junk that we've got right now, with using the energy properly, slight modifications to the ones that are using a whole lot less energy, or a whole lot more energy, slight modifications to the way that they're actually storing it, or whatever, using it to begin with, you can get these things to be more efficient. So that's what I've been trying to say. I just explained to you about an energy transfer system that I'm hoping to build. If I can build it myself, I will build it. But I want to, the reason why I said I got a hold of a company to ask them about putting six of these motors on one single shaft is because I don't want any couplings to them. I don't want any extra vibrations going on. I want that one single shaft. They would all be balanced the same. So that would make it more precision. And it needs to be precision in order to cut down on any losses. So if I can get a company to actually build me a motor generator, of course I'm not telling them it's a motor generator. All I want is for them to put six brushless motors onto one single shaft. And maybe the first one to be an outrunner, The second one will be an end runner, and it doesn't matter on the other side for the rest of them all the way down, because the way that I'm going to be pulling that energy off is I want as much RPMs as possible to produce as high voltage and as high frequency as possible. That's it. I don't need all the current. I don't need all the wattage. Don't even care at this point in game about current, watts, and amps. And that's one of the things that really makes a lot of people mad, because they just don't understand what it is that I'm trying to say to them. I'm going to be extracting the energy from this system differently than the generators that you're accustomed to using and the way that you're accustomed to using the energy that is generated. To show an amazing efficiency from the way that this thing is engineered to begin with, the amount of power on the input side, the amount of voltage on the output side, and what I actually do with that amount of voltage on the other side, that's where the fun begins. Once I've got that system in place and I show people exactly how this thing functions and they realize what it is that they can actually do with this doggone thing, that's when this whole debate about free energy is over. That's when ain't no more people going to be able to say, oh, no, there ain't no such thing as free energy. Folks, if you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking for it. And some people make fun of when people say, well, we're floating in a sea of free energy. We are. Everything around you is energy, including you is energy. There's energy everywhere. Energy in everything. And most of everything that's on this planet can be used as fuel if you understand the physics of its makeup, its chemistry, anything. And so that means that if you understand the physics of water, if you understand how to interact with this water, if you get the fact that water is a liquid and it cannot be compressed, then you know that you can use water as hydraulics. You can use water to lift massive weights. And then when you're done with that water, you can drain the water off. It's not the first time in history that's ever been done. Go out and look at how some of these locks work at these places where ships go from one side to the next. They raise the water level, it raises the ship up, and so on. And then they go to the next stage and do the same thing, lower the water down, raise it up, same thing. Lift massive ships using hydraulics. But we also know that if we take and boil that water into steam, that ship ain't going nowhere. You can't float a massive ship on steam. You have to have that water. But you can take that massive steam and you can guide it into turbines, and under pressure that steam will turn those turbines. And by the way that you design those turbines will give you either torque or RPMs. So it isn't that we ain't got the power, it's that we aren't engineering things to their maximum advantage. That's what I've been trying to say. This little gizmo that I'm talking about, motor generator, will prove something to the physics world. It'll prove something to basic and science and physics. It'll prove something to everybody in this world. And even those engineers out there that scoffed at you can't get something to run under its own power, like the perpetual motion, over unity, zero point. Those terminologies, zero point, perpetual motion, and over unity, are ridiculousness in there, muddying up the water, and the sooner that the alternative energy community stops using that stupid terminology, the less ignorant that they on the other side will be able to try to make us look like we don't know what we're talking about. voltage-wise, there is no way that you can say that you can't get out more than you put in. I put in a certain amount of voltage, I can get out an astronomical amount of voltage on the opposite side. So, voltage-wise, that's over unity. You got more voltage out than you put in. Now, current-wise, because they don't understand what it is that I'm trying to say, you just ramp that voltage way up there, which dropped the current way down. Now, how do you get that voltage that's way up there to come back down to a stage where now it's back in the current deal again? Well, you understand what the power company's been doing for years and charging you for it. They take that ramped up voltage, they shove it down in a step down transformer that acts as a capacitor and slows that energy back down and stores it so that you have usable on demand power that they ship to you from miles away. They used everything that Tesla showed them to get you to pay every time you turn that light switch on. It's as simple as that. And now that the word's out that energy is free, now the question is, how many of the average Joes can we gather out there to actually use their talents to engineer things and be willing to share those things engineered with the rest of the world? I've been trying to build the dream team, folks. I've been trying. And I've been trying to give everybody a chance to be a part of it. I want even those who aren't electrically inclined to be a part of it. I want those who aren't mechanically inclined or scientifically inclined, or some of them who would like to have a free electric, no electric bill, but just don't understand, but are willing to try to help out in any way possible. And no, I'm not asking for donations. I never, ever, and won't be. What I'm looking for is partners. I'm looking for people that, you know, I'm a lousy person at trying to get the information to everybody who needs the information. So I need somebody who's good at talking to people to get out there and say, hey, look, this is what we got going on. And to get that information, just like I'm talking about the efficiency of transferring energy, the efficiency of transferring knowledge from this brain to everybody who wants it, and so on. But everybody out there's got a talent, everybody out there's got a skill, everybody's out there working for the man somewhere or another. You don't talk about massive industrial espionage where you go and work at a company and you learn all their tricks, and then you take these tricks and you go out and start your own business and learn how to do that. Well, imagine if you had all the workers of the world who have all these skill sets that on their free time get together and start engineering things that would rival every single company out there as far as quality-wise, as far as efficiency-wise. The people's company. The people's corporation. You know, people for people. Like the People for People radio network. Go over and check them out. They're awesome people. But nonetheless, you, the people. You don't need billions and trillions of dollars. All you need is each other. If we can get a large majority of you motivated to helping one another, and to take all this knowledge that we have access to right now, we've got the pieces of the puzzle. Now we need the people who are capable of manufacturing and assembling these ideas from idea to physical object. Now see, there were individuals out there that scammed people, and they asked for money, and they wanted people to come together and basically build them a business. Give me money. Go out there and do one of these doggone GoFundMe accounts and ask everybody for money. I don't want their money. The money's not going to do it. What I need is their talent, I need their piece of the puzzle to add with my piece of the puzzle. And together we share the burden and the expense together, and we both benefit. So when we're making a energy device, we make two of them, one for you and one for me. And if we can afford it, because of the way that we've engineered these and figure out that these are on the store shelves, we could actually, you know, make a couple for somebody else. And put the diagrams of everything out there on Shaziz Radio Network and all these other networks for everyone else to benefit across the board. That's what the Dream Team was supposed to be about. Some folks, they couldn't get themselves out of the matrix of the school books. Back when I said I didn't care about current watts and amps, I was serious. Because what I'm talking about doing, you can't measure in current watts and amps. You got to go to a completely different form of measurement, where you're measuring BTUs or lumens. Because what I was talking about was, on the output side, on the input side of it, you can measure your current watts and amps all you want. Measure all the drain that you want on that side. You're fine. Your math's going to apply over there. But unless you're willing to measure from a different type of math on the output side, because of the way that I've transferred this energy from one form to another, so that I would not invoke the Lenz law that would then in turn go back and make your numbers even higher on that side of what this doggone system was draining in order to try to run it. Do you see what I'm saying? If you understand what I'm trying to tell you, you'll understand why those folks couldn't get Bedini's work to function properly, because they didn't understand it. But hopefully this let somebody listen to this. If you know somebody who's into free energy and they're trying to figure something out, let them listen to this podcast, what I've said, and hopefully the way that I explained it will give them a better understanding, and that will give them the solution to how to make their energy device function to the way that they want it to function. It's something simple. I guarantee you, with every single one of their devices, it's something ridiculously simple why they can't get it to work right. But from start to finish, all we are doing is moving energy from one place to the next and getting work done in the process. That's it. My understanding, as soon as we open the gate and let those horses out of the gate, they're going to trample everything in sight. There's energy going in all different directions. And in the process of trampling, that's cause and effect. They smash this, which causes the release of that and the release of that. So there's flower petals flying everywhere, dust kicking up. These horses are taking all their horsepower and they're pushing. They're pushing the wind. They're stomping through the water. So you got all this energy flying around you in every different direction, which is all now wasted energy. Nobody used it for anything. They was just trying to get the heck out of the way. But if you understood that, you could guide those horses where you wanted them to go. And you could take the energy that they were expelling out from them, everything from the basically every step they take, because you understood piezoelectrics, you understood sonic waves and stuff like that, every noise they made, every move they made, the heat off the bodies of these horses as they're coming down the corral can be tapped into. Every bit of energy, when it's in motion, can be utilized, stored, and tapped into. When that horse runs past you and the wind that he kicks up blows your hair sideways, that's power. It's what I've been trying to say all along, that everything that is going on in this world is energy. And the way that it travels is in waves. No matter what the school book tells you, put the doggone school book down and start paying attention to what's going on. Take your basic science and your basic physics, pay attention to what nature has already showed you, and you'll understand the words that are coming out of my mouth. We got every single thing necessary to prove once and for all beyond a shadow of a doubt, 150,000% beyond a shadow of a doubt, energy is free. And that if you use this energy in the most efficient manner possible, if you understand the physics, and you can get it down to where if you are paying an electric bill, the man is selling you his version of the electricity is only getting pennies as opposed to what he used to get from you. And then if you get tired of the man taking those pennies, then I tell you what, throw a supplementary system in there with a solar power or a little wind generator, because now what you normally would have used from him, you can easily replicate with what nature's already done. And you take that energy and you step it up, you move it around, you step it back down, you change the form of that energy, and now you have the perfect efficient house that doesn't require putting your pennies in the man's bucket. I don't know what more to say. I've said everything that I could possibly say. I said it as many times and as loud and in as many different ways as I could possibly say it. And it's up to you now. It's up to people of the world. I put before you free energy. If you just understand what I'm just trying to say to you. Stop looking for over-unity. Stop looking for zero points. Stop looking for something for nothing. Nature's already provided everything you need. Everything. Every bit of power that you need to get all the work done that you want to get done has been provided for you. You can take one solar panel, one little 40-watt solar panel, and produce enough energy to run your entire house. No ifs, no ands, no buts. If you understand the energy that's coming out of that thing, and you know what to do with that energy, and you use all the laws of physics to your advantage, it's not even an issue anymore. And the people in the alternative energy community that continue to beat their head against the wall and to continue to degrade one another and poo-poo every single idea that comes along, all you're doing is slowing down the process. Instead, step back, look at the big picture, listen to what I'm trying to say to you. Let's come together and let's build the things needed to prove our points. Once and for all. Tesla tried to give the world free energy. The reason why he wasn't able to give free energy is for blatant, obvious greed. People wanted to sell what he was trying to give away. And then people didn't understand what he was trying to show. So even to this day, you'll have so-called science guys and physics guys mocking and poo-pooing what Shaziz learned from Tesla. Vice versa, nonetheless. What I learned from my observations and research from everything that Tesla did, and my mechanical understanding of what is actually going on, what he tried to show everybody out there. These mainstream science folks, and even on YouTube science guys or whatever, and they say, oh, well, you know, wireless energy is only good for this, and then, you know, it's never going to do that, it's not as efficient, and it's not free energy, blah, blah. They just didn't understand what Tesla just showed them. Tesla opened Pandora's box, and those who understood the information that came up out of there are those that run this country and yours. those are the ones who have the power structure. Those are the ones that have the cool toys and the flying machines that go through the air and the high-tech surveillance devices. Those are the ones who understood exactly what Tesla showed everybody. And all that information, instead of being taught in school in the new science and the new physics, the updated version of the old way of thinking, instead of them teaching people that, they still taught them about Newton and Einstein and all the theories of relativities and all the theories of everything that science had to offer. And so the educational side of science stopped growing and becomes stagnant. The mainstream side of science sold its soul to the devil, which leaves the only real science left, and that's mad science, which is me, and those that like to do the same thing that I'm talking about. But we got every single answer, folks. We got everything, every single thing necessary to ensure that nobody has to go without air conditioning, heating, or cooling, whatever, heating, cooling, water, fresh water, all the food that needed. We know how to grow things perfectly. We know that nature's provided every doggone medicine under the sun for every possible problem under the sun. And until you get the right group of people who's willing to implement the solutions, then they're all just out there in the realm of what's that word that I'm looking for? Mythology. Or as the mainstream whipping people would like to say, pseudoscience. That's pseudoscience. No. That's mad science. That's real science. Wouldn't be no reason for mad science if real science hadn't sold its soul to the devil. And we're not talking Scientology either. We're talking real science. Understanding the cause and the effect and testing and retesting and sharing this information with the world that should have been shared all along via the school books. It's as simple as that. If you want to join the dream team, it's real easy. Throw a contact out there. Say hi. Join me on Skype. Join me in the chat room. And I've even got extra chat room stash here and there for conversations just between the dream team. There's all kinds of platforms available out here that we can utilize all these technologies out here in digital cyberspace to share information on demand. Virtual labs, kind of like Mark Brash down there at Zero Fossil Fuel. He's got a link down there underneath one of the chat rooms. I think it's under the TCT chat room. Go over and check out RWG Research, but Mark Brash over there at the Zero Fossil Fuel, he's got his own chat rooms and he's got his own shop, and he live streams while he's working and interacts with people, and that's basically a version of virtual labs that I was talking about trying to do here at Shaziz Radio, trying to get everybody involved in that deal so that when you're doing research over in your lab and I'm doing research, whatever research that somebody's interested in, they have a link to that live stream going on where they can ask questions and interact and throw their piece of puzzle on the table. That's what I've been hoping to accomplish. So, I don't know what more to say. Haven't been said at all. Let me think. Anyway, I'm going to throw us out of here with a song. World said we got problems. I say we got solutions. And until we decide to implement them, then there are still going to be problems. And so with that said, energy is free. And whoever wants to debate it, step forward throwing down the gauntlet, bring it forward. Meantime, we're going to travel down the road flirting with disaster, just like Molly Hatchet said, because eventually mankind's stupidity will catch up with them. And I'm here to say we can resolve it.
Run!
space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.